This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. 2020 has been such a crazy year. You might have missed a big centennial. It's been 100 years since Detroit radio station WWJ became the first commercial broadcast station in the United States. And in those 100 years of radio, our next guest spent the last 5 decades reporting on Michigan news for numerous stations and news services. Dick Hafner just retired after spending the last 30 years at WJR in Detroit, and it is our pleasure. Dick, welcome to Stateside.
Wow, I'm so delighted to be here. Thank you for the opportunity. It's my honor. I'm your biggest fan, so now I get to be on your show. This is a big thrill for me.
It's a mutual admiration society, for sure. First off, congratulations on your retirement after 50-plus years of being in the news industry. You know, it's so rare for people to stay in the business that long these days. I feel like you sort of did the Iron Man achievement.
Well, yeah, it's kind of astounding for me when I look at that in hard black and white, 51 years of doing this nonstop, and no one kicked me out of the room. No one opened the door and told me it's time to exit. So I'm pretty astounded that I lasted so long myself. I do have to tell you that I never considered myself the best newscaster or the best reporter or the best news director. I thought I had some talents in those areas. But I always thought that going back a long way, one of my watchword slogans to myself was, if you can't run fastest, try to run farthest. And maybe I did that.
Again, with the Ironman ultramarathon analogy, you grew up in a time when TV and radio were still sort of in competition with each other for media dominance.
Yes.
Was there something that drew you to radio in particular?
As a child, my favorite thing that I had, my favorite possession, my most prized possession was my transistor radio. As a child, I got a radio and started listening to it and was fascinated by the voices and the things I heard, entertainment, music, but especially news. I was drawn to the newscasts on the radio as a child. During the daytime, I could, if I wasn't in school or out playing baseball or football, that's really what I wanted to do, I could listen to the local news. And at night, I was one of those kids who turned the dial to listen to what was happening in those faraway places. I discovered that you could travel by way of your little radio on these scratchy AM radio stations. So I could take a trip to exotic, exciting places like Pittsburgh or St. Louis or even Toronto. And I was thrilled. I like to do it even now. I love to fiddle around with my shortwave radio and listen in to the radio stations of the world. So that's how I got interested in this. And I thought it was much more exciting and interesting than television, where you're tied to a picture and they're programming and talking around the picture. In radio, it's so much simpler and direct. You have to concentrate on the spoken word, or you're going to miss what's happening. Nothing else is helping you. There's no visual assistance to you. You have to listen carefully. And to me, that is the power of radio.
A man after my own heart. When did your career officially begin? I read that you and a friend basically started the newsroom at Wayne State's public radio station, WDET. Was that the start of it all?
Well, we didn't realize it at the time, but yes. We, being myself and my friend Dave Robinson, who had just gotten back from Vietnam as a Marine and was a 26-year-old Wayne State student. I was 19. And we were on the little campus radio station doing news when the Wayne State public station decided that they would expand from just playing classical music all day and night and start doing some news. So they incorporated us from the little campus station, brought us in, and in the fall of 69, I had my chance to be on the airwaves for the first time in Detroit, doing newscast for free. I was happy to be doing that. I thought they were doing me a great favor, which they were. And later on, like all you public broadcasters, you find some magical way to get a few bucks connected with what you're doing. And so we did that. But that was my first exposure on the air. And at the time, we didn't know it, but we were creating this little news department, which is still in business today and doing very well.
Yeah. Was it a big shock when you ultimately moved over to commercial radio?
Yes, it was a big shock when I had to realize very early on that our mission was twofold. One, to put good programming on the air, but two, just as important, maybe more important, we had to make money. We had to make a profit for our company. So coming out of a college environment, which I was still in when I got my first commercial job, yes, I had to learn that very quickly.
Dick, you've been around for so many really important moments and changes in Michigan's history and in Detroit's history. What are some of the biggest changes that you've noticed, and what do you think has remained the same?
The auto industry, of course, is diminished, but is changing, evolving. The threatened Great Lakes, something that should disturb and concern all of us in Michigan and all the surrounding states. I thought that in recent years, the legalization of marijuana was a major step, Michigan, because I grew up in the era of nasty Mary Jane.
And reefer madness, yeah.
And reefer madness. Of course, one of my favorite bands are the Coral Reefers of Jimmy Buffett, but that's a side issue. But in Detroit, and of course, my reporting and experience is mainly Detroit-centric, I'm impacted every day when I go into the city and go to work and drive around and look around and see all the empty spaces. And you see that in Flint also, and in a couple of our auto-oriented cities where there are large vacant spaces where there used to be lots of people and buildings and houses. So those are the changes I've seen, but that's the reality of how life changes. And I understand that even if I feel that some of those changes are bad and have been bad, we can make it good for ourselves if we do it right.
Dick, I've heard a couple of different interpretations of how history works, American history works. You know, some people see it as more of a timeline where this happens and then that happens and then something else happens, and there's some sort of sense of moving forward through time. And more recently, I've heard people talk about history as more of a pendulum that swings back and forth, and certain things repeat themselves over time. Which theory do you think is more true?
I'm the pendulum person, definitely. Politically speaking, we always see the struggle between not only the political parties, but what people are thinking, and they all seem to repeat themselves to me. Also, on the subject of how we in the news business cover breaking news, even though our technology has changed so much, has changed the way we try to cover the breaking news, the rules stay the same, and the concerns I have always heard from reporters stay the same as they were 51 years ago when I started. And then I like to read history. I like to read how wars start and finish. I like to read how politicians started and finished their careers. And so frequently, at least I have seen, they start and finish in very similar fashion. And the mistakes and the good things that we do were only repeats of what happened before. So that's about as far as my complicated thinking goes. I'm a newsman who likes to cover history as it's happening. And that's what I do best. As far as highfalutin philosophical conversations, I leave it to people who are a lot smarter than I am.
You're of an age to have covered not just one or two, but several frightening periods of history. You know, you were working in the period in which 9/11 happened. when history and world events got a lot real and a lot more vivid to a lot of people, even in the Great Lakes region, who didn't consider themselves great consumers of this, you were around and of working age during the uprising. You know, one of several points at which a lot of people in Michigan realized that many things they might have assumed about their state were not necessarily true. What were some of the hardest stories that you had to cover?
Now, in 1967, I was 17. I only took my car as close to the conflagration as I could get so that I could see it as a citizen. I was already interested in news, and I kind of thought that's where I was going, and I needed to see it for myself. And fortunately for me, when I got too close, some of the African-American people that I encountered looked at this suburban white kid and they warned me, don't go any farther, go back. And so I did. So I only covered the aftermath of the what I call conflagration. And it's been certainly interesting, sometimes difficult, to see all the steps and the developments that have occurred in response to that. Those were difficult times, and I'm talking about the early 70s now, when I first encountered people like Coleman Young, the young Ken Cockrell, the mayors of Detroit, some of the terrific city council people that we had, and some of the bad ones, and community activists. I was lucky enough to meet and talk with many of those people, but also had to keep my head down sometimes because I would be in the middle of actual trouble going on. And then I also got to see things like plane crashes and what happened to families who were affected by people who died in those plane crashes or other big tragedies that occurred. And later on, we had to certainly deal with the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. They didn't happen here, but they affected everyone here. And I got to listen to some of the stories of people, families of those who died in the crashes. Certainly, there was a big Detroit connection with some of the offices that were in the Twin Towers and have local connections. Mm-hmm. Those were stories that always have stuck with me. Very interesting to go back and read and listen to some of the things that we did and some of the things I did, and always think of another question that I should have asked or something else that I should have been curious about but wasn't. I know you go through the same thing sometimes when you go through your archives or your old tapes.
Absolutely. Was there ever a time or a story that made you feel like you were at a loss for words? And if so, what would you do?
When I was involved in doing reports over the years about what was called the Oakland County Child Killer, a series of abductions and murders that occurred in the 1970s in Oakland County, I was heavily involved in that. And so I would encounter the families of the children who were killed. And I think I never really responded to them very well, their stories, because I would have great sympathy and sorrow for not only what happened, but what I saw, the continuing tragedy in their lives. Because the cases were never solved. They don't know, and they didn't know who killed their sons, who killed their daughters. And so I always felt so inadequate, as they were kind enough to speak to me to help me do news stories about their personal tragedy. And I never thought that I did a very good job of speaking with them. And usually when I encountered that situation, I was mostly quiet. I said as little as possible because I didn't know what to say.
Honestly, Dick, I don't know that there is a response in a situation like that that is going to help what people in that situation have been through.
Well, there's no response that I could ever give them, and I'm glad that you understand.
Yeah. You know, I think that a lot of people maybe don't understand how much of reporting work is unglamorous and involves shoe leather, boring public hearings, or, you know, stuff that just needs a bit of research and a bit of thought. And it's, you know, it's not celebrity interviews. It's trying to figure out what's going on with the Water Bureau or things of that nature. And yet there are moments in which the workday can be very dramatic. Was there ever a moment when you were maybe close to deadline, or it just seemed like everything was going wrong and you just didn't think you were going to finish the story, but you did?
Well, I think there were a lot of times where I didn't really finish the story, that's for sure. And I covered my share of fires, murders, and school board meetings. I've always thought that's the heart of what we do every day. And you try your best to figure out what's going on in those situations and figure what is the little shining angle that needs to come through and break through that I can help put on the air to illuminate for our listeners what's really going on. Fortunately, we have the beauty of the technology to allow us to do live radio, put things on live as they're happening, unfiltered to the public. And so I think I rarely felt that something that I was putting on was unfinished. If it was unfinished, it was because it was naturally unfinished. And we'd go back later and find out what the real story was and find out what the conclusion is. That's the beauty of live broadcasting and live radio. So I'm not so sure I worried so much about those kind of situations that you just mentioned.
Do you ever worry about the future of audio as a medium?
No. Very simply put, as long as people have two ears and they can hear, they will be interested and seek out what is on the radio, what is being offered to them in audio form. That's why people will always be interested in listening to Stateside, in listening to breaking news stories, newscasts. It's the easiest way for someone to learn what's happening quickly and what's happening now. All they have to do is push a button and then listen. There's no other effort that they need to exercise. On television, you have to watch the screen because it is picture oriented. If you go away from the TV, then you lose what's happening. In a newspaper, you've got to read it, whether it's a hard copy in your hands or a screen in front of you. And you have to concentrate on what you're looking at. In radio, you just need to listen to it. That's the beauty of it. And so I think it's very easy to understand why radio and radio news has been around for 100 years, and I think it'll be around for at least another 100.
Dick Hafner has just retired from 30 years at WJR in Detroit. He put in a good 20 before that as well. Dick, it's amazing to talk to you, and we hope that you have a safe holiday season and get as much enjoyment out of it as you can.
Well, thank you. You know, you're familiar with the cable TV show Dirty Jobs.
Oh, yeah, Mike Rowe. I love it.
Yeah, well, I've only been officially retired for 3 days now, 3 or 4 days, and I've been tackling some of those dirty jobs. So there's more waiting for me. I'm kind of surprised that my retirement has gotten all this attention. But in going into these dirty jobs that I've been doing and are waiting for me, it has brought me back down to reality. So
Well, try to take it easy. Don't work too hard, okay?
Okay.
Bye, Dick.
Bye-bye, April. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you.